You're listening to 88.1 FM KVSC. I'm Samich, the music director here at KVSC, and I'm sitting here talking to Greta Morgan, who is the alter ego of Springtime Carnivore. She just released her full-length album out on Autumn Tone Records earlier this month. Greta, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on your show.
Glad to have you on here. I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to, you know, all the stuff that you've done before in Chicago bands like The Hush Sound and Gold Motel. So I've always enjoyed your work.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that you released your self-titled EP in the fall of 2012, I believe, which was, it's crazy to think that was 2 years ago. But it wasn't until the summer of 2013 that I actually stumbled upon Springtime Carnivore. I don't remember how I found the Facebook page and the music, but and I was also shocked that I didn't know for almost a year that you had new music out there in the world, and I didn't know about it.
Yeah, that's a very sweet framework for this interview because, yeah, I did want it to be anonymous. Like, I think I was feeling really crippled by expectations, like, or really crippled by feeling like I needed to pander to fans or like I needed to desperately ask people to listen.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring my relationship with music back to the place it was when I first started making music, which is that this world is kind of full of an infinite possibility of the type of people you can reach and the way in which you can reach them. And I almost think about making music and putting it out on the internet is sort of like when people make radios in their basement and try to reach outer space. Like,
mm-hmm.
There's something very magical to me about being able to put sort of like an electronic message in a bottle out into the world and just seeing who responds. So I really started this whole project and continue to run this whole project like an experiment. And I don't have that much expectation from a business standpoint, the way that I was sort of forced to do in other bands where I would be supporting bandmates, so, you know, we'd be really aiming to make a great living. This project started as like an art project rather than something to promote. And so, yeah, the last few years, I mean, it's sort of ironic that like the thing I start as an art project also happens to bring me like the biggest and best opportunities I've had. Like, you know, I've gotten to open for some of my favorite bands of all time. I got to go on tour in Europe earlier this year. I have some really exciting tours coming up next year. So it's sort of funny because it wasn't started with that intention. It was like just started with the intention of making the music really pure and making the transmission really pure.
So I guess, you know, you didn't want to release music as, let's say, Greta Morgan, because you didn't really want to have that sort of stigma or like expectation with, you know, what you've done previously.
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't want to have to like feel the responsibility of being me. And like there's, you know, not that I'm like a diva or at Lady Gaga level, but I certainly had an audience. Yeah, like there's this Pablo Picasso quote, give a man a mask and he'll tell you the truth. And I think that that's a really interesting idea. You know, it's sort of like under this secret veil, I have been able to express myself more clearly and honestly than I have in past years. I felt sort of like I needed that. I needed to be able to have this mask to hide behind in order to express something that was very true.
You know, with you have a kind of very interesting sort of little backstory that you created for Springtime Carnivore with the whole tightrope walker back, you know, story and everything. And I just wonder, how have people reacted to this moniker and to this, like, story? Have some people kind of scratched their heads at that?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. I think many people realized that it was sort of a metaphor, you know, and for me it was this, like, recurring dream that I kept having. I would be on this balance beam that's like higher and higher and higher, and then I would fall. And so in a weird way, I feel like my spirit was going through that, and my spirit was then writing songs from that place as someone who was like recovering from an injury. Yeah, it was interesting because I played one show. I think it actually was the Minneapolis show, and I was stretching, you know, and like warming up before the performance, and I was like, you know, doing the splits and doing all my normal physical exercises. And then after the show, when I went to settle with the promoter was like, Oh, it's great that you take such good care of yourself on tour. I imagine you had to because of the injury. And it was funny because I just said, yeah. Like, I didn't feel the need to explain it.
Oh, yeah, or to correct the person.
Yeah. I was sort of like, if she wants to believe that that's what happened to create, you know, this experience, then that's totally cool. It's weird because it feels like sort of a lie, but not really a lie. Kind of like, mm-hmm. It's more of a metaphor, I guess, how I picture it. And that was really just to deter anyone from knowing it was me for a few years, was this, like, totally absurd story.
Like I said earlier, it's been 2 years since you released your first self-titled Springtime Carnivore EP. And I've definitely been waiting with, you know, bated breath for whenever a full-length album was going to come out. So I wonder, what was the process of making, you know, your full-length debut, and how long did it, you know, take to write and record it?
So the EP, which was like Collector's Last One to Know, I put that out 2 years ago, and those were the only songs that existed then.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I guess, like, all in all, from the generation of the initial ideas to the release of the full-length album took about 2 years. So it was probably like a year to a year and a half of writing and recording to finish it. And for me, the process of writing and recording was also an experiment where I go to my rehearsal space, which I basically describe as like a creative bomb shelter because it's this thick concrete building. I go in and it's, you know, there are no windows, there's no internet, there's no cell phone service. So it's basically like being in this place where time kind of stops. And I would go in there for like, you know, 3 to 6 hours every morning, usually every day, and just kind of write and play and sort of put myself in like a trance state where I would leave and not really remember what had happened. Like I would leave and just sort of be like, oh my God, how is it 3 p.m. and what have I been doing? And then the next day I would go back and listen and be like, weird, I recorded a song. Seriously, like, it's so funny now that I can say that I recorded a large portion of the record. You know, Richard Swift did 3 songs, but I had recorded the rest of it. And it's funny because I barely know how to record. But it was like I think it was just like a higher mind intuition thing. I seriously feel like it was just like something was leading me. I know that sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I still believe that I don't know what I'm doing. Like when other people ask me to record their music, it never turns out the way that mine turns out because there's just something different that like happens from my heart when I'm doing my own stuff.
Well, talking about the album, you know, it's mostly an upbeat one, you know, similar to, you know, what you did with Gold Motel. But one of my favorite tracks on the album was Other Side of the Boundary. I thought, you know, it's such a haunting and sparse tune, you know, it's just you and guitar. It's definitely, I think it stands out from the rest of the album. It's very different. So I wonder, what is the story behind this track and how did it, you know, make the cut on such a sort of sleek, big, you know, sonic kind of album?
You know, it's interesting because that's the one song where my voice is the clearest. Like, my voice is affected on many of the other songs. Mm-hmm. And that song just came to me very clearly. Like, it was like hearing a bell ringing. So much of it is just intuition. There's not much analytical thinking in my creative life. It's just sort of like this gut feeling. And one of them is like, oh, that song's got to be on there. And it has to be really pure. Like, however it's done, I can't. That's a song where the skeleton is so clear that I didn't want to, like, cloud it up with production. I don't know. It just, like, came to me like it was supposed to be sparse.
That definitely makes sense. I think, yeah, your voice comes in so clearly there compared to the rest of the album, and I just think it sounds great.
Thanks.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Another, you know, kind of in a totally sort of different direction, I think. Another one of my favorite tracks on the album is Talk to Me Slow, which I think your voice is definitely affected. I don't know, it's got such a great feel to it, you know. When I was trying to think of, like, the words to describe how you sound and how the song sounds, is one of the words I thought of was sultry, which is, kind of, I don't know, kind of funny, but it kind of, like, rumbles through, and then once it, like, culminates to the chorus, it's such a sonic burst. It's a big display of your voice too, and when I listen to that track, I find it hardly recognizable from like the early days, you know, like 10 years ago when you were doing stuff with the Hush Sound. What do you think you were trying to express or like achieve with Talk to Me Slow?
You know, I'm glad that that's one of your favorites, because that's the one song on the record where I thought, as a listener, I wouldn't get into it. You know what I mean? I almost cut it. Because when I listen through the record and I imagine just being a listener, I think that song just takes a little bit more patience.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy to hear you say that. Yeah, I don't know. That was another one where it just happened really naturally, and like, that chorus lyric came to me first. It's so funny. I can't remember my own words. It's such a long ride home. Will you keep talking to me slow? Your sympathy comes and goes, but it's the guardrail on my road. Like that second line, that your sympathy comes and goes, but it's the guardrail.
That lyric came
in one piece. And so then the whole rest of the song sort of came together around that one piece. Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's funny that you ask, just that you framed it with the words, what was I, in quotes, trying to accomplish with that song. It's really interesting because my process is so much more of an internal thing that blooms outward rather than this kind of like external goal that then I orchestrate. You know, I think many people will say like, I'm going to write an album that sounds and feels like ELO, and they just go ahead and do it. You know, it's the way that a lot of films are made, where they say, like, new superhero movie out September 2016, and then they work backwards.
Yeah.
And I'm not as much that way. I'm more of, like, I get this feeling, you know, and it's, like, inside of me. Like, I get this feeling, it's either, like, something real dreamy in my mind, or it's some feeling around my heart, or just like ideas start generating and bubbling, and then I like release it into the world by kind of writing and recording it, and then that's it. It's like the process is over, because whatever it was that was inside me has kind of come to fruition, and then things quiet down again until like the next sort of bubbling feeling starts. I don't know. I can't answer what I was like, in quotes, trying to accomplish, other than just letting that thing, which was like in my physical channel, come out.
I dare to ask this question, since you've been working, you know, you've been putting out music for about 10 years. I wonder, you know, have you ever thought about just quitting music? Like, have you ever thought about doing anything else in your life?
Yeah, totally. It's so funny. Like, I said something the other day in an interview that was almost like my mouth was revealing something to the rest of my body. You know, it was almost like something I hadn't consciously thought of. And then I said it, and I was just like, whoa. And someone else asked, they said, you know, many other musicians talk about touring and how it really wears them out. And you don't seem to get worn out. Like, it seems like you just kind of bounce back every time you do something that would maybe exhaust somebody else. And then I said in response, I was like, yeah, you know, 99% of the time, I feel really called to do this. And it makes it really easy because I feel called to do it. And it's only 1% of the time that I wonder if it's the wrong number. And like, I have thought about, like, what is my highest purpose? You know, I think that's what most people are seeking in their lives. And what's really important to me is human connection. And I've been really fortunate that people have connected with my songs. And that makes it feel very worthwhile. And it makes it feel, you know, like something worth really diving all my passion into. But I've also considered, is there a better way to reach people, to connect with people? And for me, that probably would be working as a psychologist, working as a counselor, and also somehow bringing writing into the equation, maybe more narrative writing rather than songwriting. So any time that I've considered leaving music, it's been for seeking a different method of like human connection, but I always get pulled back to music, like always. It's just like my, you know, it's sort of like my true north. Like it's the way that I reset. It's the way that my spirit gets recalibrated. I don't know. I keep just being brought back to it out of love.
Well, you just finished a fall tour with Generationals. And I know you just announced you've got winter/spring tour 2015 with the Dodo. So, you know, you've got some time off. What are your plans for these next couple months of not touring?
Well, I am going to be doing a bunch of really fun recording on my own. Like, I think I might record some covers and just kind of do some more musical experimentation. I'm going to be living in the middle of nowhere in Joshua Tree in the winter.
Nice.
So I'll either, like, go insane and my life will turn into The Shining, or I'll just come out of it with a bunch of really, really great new ideas. So we'll see.
I bet you'll have a good time in Joshua Tree. You won't be in Minnesota. If you were in Minnesota in the snow, then you would go insane.
Yeah, I know from growing up in Chicago how brutal those winters can be. But it makes people so much tougher, and it also makes you appreciate nice weather so much more.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, Greta. We've been spinning your debut album just constantly. It's been at the top of our charts, you know, our CMJ charts for the past few weeks. And I look forward to where, you know, this project will take you, definitely.
Awesome, yeah. I appreciate it so much, and thanks for coming up with such thoughtful questions. Awesome.
It only came from, you know, a very long-time listener and fan of yours. Kind of a dream come true, I'll call it that.
Oh, rad. Awesome. Well, thanks for having me on.
No, another plug. You're playing, you know, the 7th Street Entry in Minneapolis on March 7th, I believe. So hopefully I'll see you there. And, you know, maybe anyone who's tuning in right now will see you then as well.
Rad. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you very much, okay. Greta.
All right. I'll see you in March.
All right.
Okay. Have a good day.